Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 27th of August. Tax inversions. This hour of the program, the president has said that these overseas mergers are throwing, he's throwing cold water on some of these deals. He referred to companies looking to shift their domicile as corporate deserters and has said that he pledges to curtail the practice with or without congressional approval. Well, as you well know, we had another one of those, if that's what we can call it. There's some question about what this really is. Burger King, the latest corporation, which will, I believe, become a Canadian company with their takeover of a coffee and donut shop. It's very big in Canada. Walgreens tried to do something similar a few months ago, but Americans got very upset about it, and they decided not to. So we're going to look at this whole issue of corporate tax rates in this country and elsewhere. What exactly is a tax inversion? Did Burger King do the wrong thing in terms of doing wrong by America and getting a cheaper tax rate by buying the Canadian company? And why have there been so many of these in the last 2 years? Our guest this hour spoke before the U.S. Senate Committee on Finance in late July on international tax reform. Professor Mahir Desai is a professor of law at Harvard University. He is a professor of finance at Harvard Business School, a professor of law at Harvard, and a research associate of the National Bureau of Economic Research. His areas of expertise include tax policy, international finance, and corporate finance. And he said in front of that committee that the recent merger transactions highlight long simmering problems in the U.S. corporate tax, particularly with respect to its international provisions. So why? Last 12 months, a remarkable wave of merger transactions that facilitate the expatriation of U.S. corporations. That's the question of this hour, and what does it mean for all of us? We welcome your phone calls for Professor Desai. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. Professor Desai, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Let's start with a Burger King transaction. It's hard to understand the complexity of this, and I know it's complex. Why did Burger King take the action they took?
Well, Burger King undoubtedly had many motivations. One is they were seeking a global expansion. But one of the things that's being facilitated in the process of merging with Tim Hortons is that their domicile, or their citizenship, if you will switch from becoming a U.S. Multinational to a Canadian company. And that has various tax benefits that are present in all the transactions that we've been seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So we see transactions that have, you know, strategic goals. They obviously wanted to have Canadian operations and expand globally, but then they're being accomplished in ways that are very much tax motivated.
And how is it tax motivated? This is where it gets somewhat complicated for me. The tax rate is a certain percent here, but in many countries, in other countries, the tax rate, Professor Desai, is lower?
That's right. So, you know, if you go back 20 or 30 years back to the time of the last U.S. tax reform in 1986, the U.S. had a tax rate that was pretty much middle of the pack, and we employed what's called a worldwide system, where we tax our citizens on their income around the world. And most of the rest of the world did exactly like that.
Mm-hmm.
What's happened in the last 30 years is the rest of the world has moved away from that, and their tax rates have fallen considerably. So now we are an outlier on two dimensions. We have a relatively high statutory rate and at 35%. And then on top of that, we still employ a worldwide regime while most other countries have moved away. In fact, if you look at Britain and Japan, which are obviously two analogous countries in many ways, they recently scrapped their worldwide systems and they dropped their rates by 10 or 12 points. And the UK has been particularly aggressive. And the reason is the realities of the modern economy are not really consistent with hanging on to those old systems.
So when you say a 35% rate, I think some people believe that there are very few corporations in this country that pay that higher rate. Is that true or not?
Well, it is the worst of all worlds, right? So we have a high statutory rate, which is kind of the headline rate. But then people are right to point out, and as I point out as well, which is the average rate, or actually how much companies pay, is considerably lower.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what that leads to is kind of, again, the worst of all worlds, which is we don't raise that much revenue, but those statutory rates are important for determining incentives on the margin. So they give rise to lots of incentives to shift income around the world. They give rise to incentives not to invest in the U.S. And if you run a worldwide system, it gives you an incentive to keep a lot of money abroad, which is what U.S. corporations are doing. And ultimately, it gives you an incentive to say, well, I'm not sure I really want to be an American corporation anymore.
Mm. You, before this Senate committee, talked about the last 12 months, and we've had a remarkable wave of merger transactions that facilitate expatriation of U.S. corporations. What's been going on in the last 12 months? Why?
That's a great question. So, you know, this has happened before, so it's worthwhile just to step back in history a little bit. In the early 2000s, we had a big wave, and that big wave was curtailed. And that first initial wave was one where corporations could just invert by themselves and expatriate by themselves. They didn't need a foreign partner. So we stopped those, and we effectively said, if you do those kinds of paper transactions, we're going to not let you leave the U.S. You have to actually have a genuine foreign partner. And so, unsurprisingly, what's happened in the intervening years is that these foreign partners have grown up, and now, in the last 12 months, we've seen that start to happen, which is we see foreign partners and U.S. companies come together and facilitate these mergers, which accomplish an inversion. So Pfizer attempted one with AstraZeneca. Medtronic, which is close by to many of your listeners, is doing one with Covidien in Ireland. The reason why it's happened more recently is twofold. One, again, the UK recently changed, and as a consequence, the US is just more and more of an outlier. And now there are really attractive foreign partners in countries like the UK, where you can accomplish an inversion where you may not have been able to do several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second thing is that these foreign companies have, again, grown up and become of a size where you can actually merge with them and have it be a legitimate merger as opposed to an inversion transaction.
Mm. So what was the case with Walgreens? I only have a superficial knowledge of this. Did they try to do the same thing and American consumers said, we're not going to shop at you at your stores anymore because of your wanting to move outside the United States, and so they stopped? I know it's much more complicated than that, but that's the way it's been presented.
It's an interesting case. So Burger King and Walgreens are exceptional because they're retail companies, and they actually have a significant U.S. presence, and you can't really shift that presence, meaning Walgreens stores have to be in the U.S. if they want to serve U.S. customers, and the same thing for Burger King stores. Most of the other inversions have all been in life sciences and have been in companies that have a lot of intellectual property. So that's, you know, I mentioned Pfizer, Medtronic. A lot of these companies are pharmaceutical and medical equipment companies. And that makes sense because part of what you want to do is take a lot of intellectual property and potentially shift that overseas. You have a lot of overseas operations. That makes some sense. With Walgreens, what's striking, and with Burger King, what's striking is that's not so much the case. Walgreens, in fact, is almost purely domestic. Walgreens was going to do something with Boots, which is a UK. If you've been to the UK, you might have seen Boots pharmacies. And Walgreens was going to merge with them. So then the question becomes, well, they're not really affected by a worldwide system because Walgreens is still in the U.S. And the U.S. operations are still going to face 35% tax. Well, then things get a little more complicated because the other reason to do these transactions is it can become easier to take your income out of the U.S. that you've legitimately earned in the U.S. and what's called strip it and put it into another jurisdiction. So part of the rationale for these transactions is you don't want to be in a worldwide system and you don't want to have your overseas profits taxed. But the other reason to do these transactions is because it may become easier to take income out of the U.S., out of that 35% rate, and put it into another jurisdiction. So Walgreens backed off ultimately. Of course, I haven't spoken to them, so I don't know precisely why, but I think it was a combination of consumer pressure and some saber-rattling by the Treasury Department, which would suggest that some of the ways in which they were hoping to get tax savings would be cut off. And that's something which is still up to debate. But I think the sense was that a lot of the reason why they were doing it could be corrected by legislation. Mm. Regulation.
Well, tell me, Professor, is Walgreens or Burger King, for that matter, going likely to lose a lot of money or not be nearly as profitable if they just stay in the United States? I mean, what are they losing?
Well, so that's a good question. So the first piece of that is they feel that they are facing a tax rate which is too high, and so they would like to reduce their tax rate. And so that's the first thing that they perceive themselves to be losing. You know, for companies who have global operations, the U.S. regime can be actually quite difficult. So I think the easiest way to think about this is there's some kind of an investment opportunity available, let's say, in Germany. And that investment opportunity is going to be pursued by American companies and by British companies. So the question is, who's going to be able to best execute on that? And the answer is, well, the U.K. firm is going to have a low tax rate, and the U.K. is not going to try to tax that German operation. The U.S. is going to say, yeah, we're going to tax you, and we're going to tax you up to 35%. And so unsurprisingly, American businesses feel that when they compete for those opportunities, they lose out on those things. So that's the sense in which a lot of American companies feel that the tax system is not helping them. Now, of course, it is also true, as you pointed out, that U.S. companies have gotten good at avoiding taxes, mm-hmm. and actual tax revenues are low. The question is, what's the implication of all that? And for some, the answer to that is, well, we should just hammer them and try to make sure that they don't do any of this bad stuff. I think what's a more constructive perspective is to say, well, why is this system giving rise to all these perverse behavior? And let's try to get that structural answer right.
Mm-hmm. So what do you make, then, of the president's comments referring to companies looking to shift their domicile as corporate deserters? Is that over the line?
Well, you know, I don't really know what to make of those sentiments. You know, to be frank, I don't impugn people's patriotism in a flippant way, and I don't think that's a very helpful way to think about this. I think what's more constructive is to think about the underlying causes. And, you know, there we have a lot of different policy alternatives available to us. I think the president and the Treasury Secretary, in their position, I think they want to jawbone corporations into not leaving, and I understand that. But I'm not sure it's very constructive to actually talk about people's motivations in that kind of way, especially given the historical antecedents to those kinds of accusations.
And are there regulatory measures that the president could take or Congress could take to keep those corporations like Burger King, like Walgreens, from buying the foreign entity and moving their domicile? Can the president do that?
Well, so there's really three possibilities here. So one is something structural, you know, which would be a really significant reform. The second is a legislative response, which is more focused and targeted, which would be some form of what's called anti-inversion legislation. And then the third possibility is purely regulatory, which is something the Treasury Secretary could do simply by issuing regulations. So what is happening now is structural change is, at least for the next few months, given the elections and a lame dunk Congress, is probably off the table. And people are trying to figure out whether the Treasury Secretary has the capacity to do these things or whether they fall outside the normal role of regulations. And Congress is now designing rules or proposing rules that may actually ultimately become bills that would do the same thing. And those regulations or those potential laws basically try to take the juice out. And they take the juice out not by doing something structural. They take the juice out of these transactions, I mean. And they do it by not doing something structural, but by basically targeting these companies who are trying the inversions and saying, you know what, if you do them, we're going to keep an eye on you. And some of the ways in which you might have thought you're going to get tax savings, you're not going to be able to get them. Or the other form of those anti-inversion rules and law changes would be, you know what, if you want to do an inversion, you actually not just have to buy Tim Hortons, but you'll have to buy a much larger foreign entity. That way we'll know that it's a genuine merger and not a tax-motivated merger.
I see. Yeah.
So those are the kinds of possibilities that we face right now.
We're going to welcome phone calls, and I think we'll have a lot of response to this issue. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Professor Mihir Desai is our guest. He's a professor of law at Harvard University, also a professor of finance at Harvard University, and a research associate of the National Bureau of Economic Research. Tax policy, international finance, and corporate finance are his areas of expertise, so he's a perfect person to help us understand what these inversions are, why a place like Walgreens decided not to opt for corporate tax inversion, why Burger King is, what's happening in terms of the number of companies that are doing this. What about our corporate tax rates in this country and in other countries? Is there something about our rate being high that is prompting this kind of move? Or is that meaningless because there are so many tax ways to shelter your profits? Well, here go the phones. We have a lot of them, and we'll start taking your phone calls momentarily. 1-800-486-8655 is our number. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. There is a statement from Burger King, which was issued today, and we'll get our guest to respond to that. But first, let's move to a couple phone calls. We have many of them. Anne in Milwaukee. Hi, Anne.
Hi. The thing that bothers me the most about this is if the savings that these companies would get by doing this were passed on to the workers in the form of higher pay or better benefits, you know, you could almost say, okay, well, they need to save money somehow to do this. But most of the money that they save goes, I assume, to the CEO in the term, in a bonus or something. So that's the thing that drives me crazy.
Well, you make a valid point. A lot of people see it that way, Professor.
Well, I think that's a reasonable perspective, absolutely. I mean, there's nothing about these transactions that's worth cheering about. But the caller raises an interesting point, which is, you know, we tend to think about corporate taxes as being something that wealthy people pay, and as a consequence, we want corporations to pay their fair share. But what your caller is putting her finger on, I think quite deeply, is actually the corporate tax is borne by workers and shareholders and customers. So one of the reasons to think about broader reform is that we actually do like the idea of reducing corporate taxes if you want workers to benefit. And the reason is, much of the corporate tax is borne by workers. So much as the caller suggested, if they're going abroad, some of those savings might go to workers. As she suggested, some of them certainly are going to go to CEOs, and some of them will go to shareholders generally. Now, the proper balance of that is a matter of general corporate governance, which is obviously a matter of concern in the U.S. today.
Well, how much of it may go to a lower price for the goods that we buy, too? Does anybody think about that?
That's right. So that's the other piece of potential savings. And this is true for any tax, which is taxes, or in this case, people get to reduce their taxes. They're not borne by companies, because companies are really just shareholders and workers and customers. They're going to be borne by one of those three. And in fact, we know that shareholders are very mobile, customers are quite mobile, and labor is the least mobile. So one of the things that happens with a corporate tax is, like with any tax, it gets borne by the factor that's the least mobile. And in this case, it's likely workers. So when there are higher corporate taxes, that leads to lower wages and lower returns and lower and higher prices for customers. And similarly, when somebody doesn't undertake something like this, it's going to result in lower prices for consumers, higher returns for shareholders, and potentially higher wages for workers.
Mm-hmm. Let me read you Burger King's announcement here, because they've been taking a lot of flack on this, to say the least. This post is on their Facebook page right now after thousands of negative comments about their move. We hear you. We're not moving. We're just growing and finding ways to serve you better. As part of the announcement made today, we'll continue to operate as independent brands. We'll just be under common ownership. Our headquarters will remain in Miami, where we were founded more than 60 years ago, and business will continue as usual at our restaurants around the world. The decision to create a new global QSR leader with Tim Hortons is not tax-driven. It's about global growth for both brands. BKC will continue to pay all of our federal, state, and local U.S. taxes. We're proud of the heritage of Burger King, and we'll maintain our longstanding commitment to our employees, franchises, and the local communities we serve. The Whopper isn't going anywhere. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it is true that the Whopper isn't going anywhere, which is I think their operations are going to stay intact, and they would have no desire to give up on the U.S. market. And I think much of what they said is not debatable. I think the question that's debatable is, was this tax motivated or not? And I assume what was the case is they have a genuine corporate purpose to merge with Tim Hortons, which is expansion and cost savings and a whole bunch of different things. But then at the end of the day, they had to decide where the new parent company would be headquartered and located and domiciled. And that's when they made the decision to go to Canada. Now, given the relative size of Burger King and Tim Hortons, that last decision certainly would appear to be tax motivated. Now, Burger King in the U.S. will still have to pay U.S. taxes and all those things that they do now, but Burger King worldwide, Tim Hortons worldwide, all those things will no longer be under the U.S. Tax code. So depending on how you feel about that, that's good or bad, but it is certainly a reflection that at the last minute they chose very much not to have this be a U.S. parent company.
Right.
They chose to be a Canadian one.
Well, when they say, we hear you, what do you make of that? Walgreens heard and took quite a different action.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite striking, right, which is the fact that a company which is as consumer-facing as Burger King would do this. You know, I would have never thought of a year ago or 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a testament to how big the tax savings are, meaning they're willing to incur a very significant public relations risk in order to undertake this.
Fascinating.
Now, I'm sure they thought it through, and they obviously came to the calculus, which was that it was worthwhile taking that risk. That to me, is a manifestation of kind of just how broken the corporate tax system is, because it's giving companies the desire to do things that are actually quite risky and quite large just to access those tax savings.
Hmm. Mike in Chicago, hi.
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 I work for Walgreens in Chicago, and I think from my perspective, why Walgreens didn't do it, which the company was very eager to do at first, until we got pressure from the union organizations, because we have a lot of union membership, the consumers, and most importantly, from the federal government, because they were going to pull the contracts that we already have with them away. So that was a huge financial setback compared to the tax advantages, and the company was forced to abandon that plan. But from my perspective, the organizations or companies that think about going overseas, they should also think about the country, you know, who is supposed to spend the money to maintain the infrastructure in the country that they would be using. If they don't want to pay up, so someone has to charge it, that would be fine to go overseas, but who's going to pay for the roads and the other infrastructure they use? So I don't. I think I agree the government should reduce the taxes on these organizations so they don't go to other countries like Ireland and what have you. Because that's an incentive for them to go there. So
mm-hmm.
we have to offer something to them. But they also should think about this country and the future of this country to invest in it and create jobs as opposed to take it overseas. Take my answer over the phone.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks for the call. Professor?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, two things. One is, the real heavy stick here is federal contracts. And if the government withholds those, and that is what happened in the first wave of inversions. Stanley Works was a notable company that tried to do this, and the federal government, including the DOD, said they were not going to be purchasing anymore from companies that invert. So that's obviously a very significant cost. The question is whether those kinds of patchwork, bully pulpit tactics are really going to help us if we have deep structural problems. And then to the caller's second point, the reason this issue is so tough is because it does feel, in some sense, wrong that companies who benefit from all the things that America gives them somehow now leave. And that certainly is, in some basic sense, wrong. I think what is worthwhile considering is, you know, is the tax that they find overly difficult to bear, is it a good tax and is it good policy? And unfortunately, the answer to both those questions is no. Corporate tax is not a great tax because, again, it's borne by shareholders, workers, and customers, and it's always better to tax those people directly than tax them through corporations. And then second, it's giving rise to all these crazy distortions, you know, which is people sending their intellectual property overseas, people not manufacturing here, people keeping cash overseas, companies keeping cash overseas. So it's a highly problematic tax in the modern economy. So while I understand why people think, God, it's terrible of these companies to be leaving, well, you also have to think about, you know, is the underlying policy one that we like and is good? And I think the answer to that, unfortunately, is no.
But doesn't it also beg the question that some of these companies have more than enough money, thank you, and so we're looking at whether or not there's an excessive amount of money. So they're taxed at 35 and maybe they pay 15 or that because they have all these loopholes they can use. Aren't they still making enough money to pay their shareholders, to take care of their stakeholders, to take care of their employees? Or are they running a really tight ship and nobody's making very much money?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, you're right in one sense, which is that, for example, corporate profits in aggregate for the economy are at very high levels. And so it does not appear to be the case that, you know, we're living through a very difficult time for corporations. So that is true. You know, having said that, they feel competitive pressures greatly, and their competitive pressures lead them to undertake to do these things. And they have shareholders who are demanding high returns, and so they feel compelled to do this. You know, does that mean that all these folks are doing this, you know, because they have to? Certainly not. They're thinking long run, and they're thinking strategically, and they're deciding that, in fact, it's better not to be a U.S. corporation.
Mm-hmm.
I should mention that, you know, go back to the U.K. 5 years ago. This was happening in the U.K. Corporations were leaving, large ones, the advertising agency WPP, a large pharmaceutical company called Shire. And, you know, the response there was really interesting. They did not say, look at those unpatriotic companies. You know, instead they said, well, why are they leaving? And don't we want to be the home of globally successful
mm-hmm.
companies?
Mm-hmm.
And if we are the home of globally successful companies, that'll make us better off. So the frame I choose to look at this through is not, you know, gosh, why are these jerks doing this? But it's actually great to be the home of great world-class companies. And if they're leaving, you know, why would we want that? That's not good for us, and it would be better for us, in fact, if they stay and then they succeed around the world.
So forgive me if you've said this already, but the UK taxes at what level now, if anything?
I think it's down to, the statutory rate is down to 22 or 21,
mm-hmm.
And they brought it down by around 10 points over the last several years. And they did it exactly in response to this concern. But more importantly, they got rid of this worldwide system. You know, I think we may not have given this full attention, but the worldwide system is part of the really distortionary piece here. So we run a system where we tax income from all around the world. And as a consequence of that, that's what's making our multinationals so concerned, because when they earn money in Germany or China or Brazil,
mm-hmm.
the U.S. still takes a whack at that money. And that's something which their competitors don't have to face. And by the way, that's why they keep all this cash overseas,
mm-hmm.
because we only tax it when it comes back. So the worldwide regime is also the thing the U.K. got rid of and Japan got rid of, which I think is fairly important.
Mike in Brookfield, hi. Mike? Hello, Mike. Sorry, Mike. Let's go to Ivy in Evansville. Hi.
Hi. I kind of see it as they want all the benefits without the responsibilities. I understand what you're saying, but it reminds me of the fights between states to attract business. They loosen environmental standards and regulatory standards. They tax them less. Then our infrastructure and our schools go downhill. These companies have benefited from our universities. You take a drug company from basic research. They benefit from our water, shared resources that belong to people, and road systems and a safe environment to work. And the company should pay its fair share. That, in my opinion, corporations have never shown any allegiance to any country. They cannot be trusted. They do not care. The only allegiance they have is to the bottom line. And if we're not going to, ask them for the money, and if we're not going to regulate them, they won't self-regulate. And all I see is this big spiral going downhill all around the world, where corporations will say, "I'm going to leave if you don't give me a tax break. I'm going to leave," and yet, you know, the people who benefit from the shareholders, the CEOs, they just, you know, they're in it for themselves. I'm sorry. That's what it's about. It's making money.
Thank you for your call, Professor Desai.
Yeah, no, I think that's a deep criticism.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing to say is, I think you're right, which is they're in it for the money, and that's, in fact, what companies are supposed to be doing. And second thing to say is she's absolutely right, Ivy's absolutely right, which is regulations are hugely important to make sure the corporations are good actors, because we know sometimes they'll overstep the bounds. But in this particular context, the question is, are they paying their fair share? And the first answer is, well, on their U.S. income, the income they earn inside the U.S. for Pfizer or Medtronic or Burger King, they still are subject to U.S. taxes. And so they still have to pay that. The only thing that's really changing is their worldwide operations no longer face that U.S. tax rate. And again, that's something which no other country does, which is try to get them to tax that. I think one of the problems that's occurring in this debate is we're living through a period of great economic anxiety, and we've managed to demonize companies in the process. And for many, that has happened for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
But the risk if one takes that attitude is, companies are really an important part of how we grow and how we generate really good jobs here. So we have to be attentive to the way they're thinking about the world and the constraints they face. You and I might feel like, God, are they being greedy? But the answer is we live in a very highly mobile world, and companies can shift operations around the world, and companies can shift their nationality around the world. And that's today's reality. And so I think what we have to do is say to ourselves, well, bad policies that we used to have that were used to be okay, like a corporate tax that's very high, now they're kind of unsuitable. And we should be doing things in our tax system that are much better. For example, shifting to a consumption tax, thinking about achieving progressivity in different ways. The corporate tax is a really bad way to achieve social goals. So I hear Ivy's concern about corporations and what they've done, but I also think we have to acknowledge today's reality.
Mm. Well, it's going to be a tough road, isn't it? Because a lot of people share Ivy's thoughts about corporations with good reason in many ways. I mean, and you also look at what's happening with the upper 1% and people making a whole lot of money and so many people losing so much money over the last 10 or 20 years. Good luck trying to do something that might be fairer for corporations. People are going to say, what about me? Justifiably,
yeah.
Right?
Well, no, that's absolutely right. I mean, everybody, is concerned about their own family and advancing their agenda. I think what's important, though, to realize is, and this kind of goes back to the shift in sentiment that happened in the UK, which was not, darn it, these corporate jerks are leaving, but, these companies are actually engines of growth. And if we want them to stay, we have to have a system that's kind of in line with the rest of the world. Another way to say this is, the U.S. has been a very large economy in the world, and it's been okay to ignore what's going on in the rest of the world for a long time because the U.S. economy has been so big relative to the rest of the world.
Right.
But we know now, and this is good for us, which is the rest of the world is growing fast, and in many cases faster than us. When that happens, we have to be much more attuned to the way the rest of the world works, because otherwise corporations aren't going to find it very attractive to invest here and to be here. And that's an uncomfortable reality, but it is today's reality, I think.
Thanks, Ivy, very much for the call. Mike on Facebook writes this. He thinks we should eliminate all taxes except the gas tax for the roads and a 5% federal income tax and a 5% state income tax. Don't tax property or companies at all. Don't tax anyone who has a net worth over some large amount, like $5 million. And don't change it until our national debt is paid down to a reasonable amount. The more centered approach should get us through, he believes. What do you think?
So I think we're in the middle of a big debate about the size of government and how it should be financed. So the size of government is a question of, you know, what do we want the government to be doing? And, you know, people obviously have varying views on that. We have a relatively small government relative to much of the rest of the world, and we raise relatively less taxes as a consequence of that. So we can debate the size of government. What should the government be doing? And that's a deep political debate. But the second question is, how should we finance it? And there, I think we have a lot of good work to do, and we even have good answers on that question. And the answer is, we should probably have a carbon tax because of the environmental externalities and because it's a big piece of consumption. We should have a consumption tax, which is what the rest of the world has, which allows us to actually tax people in ways that's somewhat progressive, but also that doesn't distort all their savings decisions. And then on top of that, we should have a progressive tax of some kind so that we make sure and redistribute income across the income spectrum. That's a far cry from what we have today. I'm not sure I'd sign up to Mike's plan, but I do sign up to kind of really rethinking the way we tax ourselves and doing it in a much more transparent way, in a much more simpler way, in a way that thinks about consumption and really thinks about the environment, you know, much more significantly than we do today.
Professor Mihir Desai is our guest this hour. He is a professor at Harvard Law School, where he's a law professor, and he has recently testified before Congress on this whole issue of corporate taxation and inversion, the very thing that we're talking about today because of Burger King's decision and what happened with Walgreens, and actually what's happened with, as he reminds us, the last 12 months witnessing a remarkable wave of merger transactions that facilitate the expatriation of U.S. corporations. Why is it happening? We're welcoming phone calls. Our phone lines are filled right now, but eventually you'll be able to get through. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org, Facebook page The Kathleen Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls. Mike in Franklin, hello.
Hello. Hello, Professor. I have a question. In the 50s, corporations paid one-third of the taxes in this country. Today, they pay less than 10%. Now, that difference has been borne by us average taxpayers. I have no problem paying for roads and the Army and everything that should be paid for. Why do they have such a problem paying for it? That's what my question is.
Well, so you're absolutely right on the numbers, or roughly right on the numbers, which is the amount that corporations contribute to overall tax revenue has gone down a fair amount. You're absolutely right about that. And I think the question then is that a good development or a bad development, and why has it happened? And so I think the first answer to that is it may well be a good development, because corporations, while we tend to kind of make them into people and think about them as people, they aren't people. So when corporations pay those taxes, it's not them paying it. It's shareholders paying it, or workers paying it, or customers paying it. And that's why it's hard to get excited about wanting higher corporate taxes, because it's a very distortionary way to raise that money. It's always better to raise money directly from taxing workers or taxing shareholders or taxing customers. So it's hard for me, and I think many economists, to say, gosh, we want corporate taxes, because, in fact, that means we want a system that's kind of Byzantine and very indirect at taxing people. It's always better to tax people. So that's the sense in which I'm not quite as upset as you, in part because I think the corporate tax is not necessarily the right thing to do. If you want to tax shareholders more, that's great. You know, we can have capital gains taxes, dividend taxes, we can have higher income taxes. But it's just, I think it's really tempting to make corporations into people and get mad at them. But I don't know if that's really a correct way to think about it.
Thank you, Mike, for your call. Dan in West Bend. Hi.
Hi, Professor. My question is...
Dan, we can't hear you very well. Can you? We can't hear you very well. There you go. Hello?
Professor.
There we go, Dan.
All right. It's maybe an oversimplification, but is it true that the corporate tax rate was so excessive that it was cheaper to buy Tim Hortons than it was to pay the U.S. income tax or corporate tax? on their foreign revenue? Is that basically what it comes down to?
Well, so it is the case that many corporations have overseas cash. And one of the problems with having overseas cash is if you bring it back to the U.S., you have to pay that full 35%. As one example on this, you know, Apple has about $100 billion in Ireland. And if they brought it back to the U.S., they'd have to pay 35%. Now, you can see why instead of that, they might say to themselves, you know what, let's go buy a foreign company because it's better to do that. And maybe I'll even overpay a little bit in that process. So that, again, to me, is a reflection of how distorted the current system is, because if they bring it back, they're stuck. In the Burger King case, it's not clear to me that that was motivating them, that may have been part of the motivation. But for a lot of U.S. companies, and the numbers are staggering, so it's over $1 or $1.5 trillion are held by U.S. companies but held overseas. And it's locked out of the U.S. in effect because they don't want to come back and pay the repatriation tax. So instead they're keeping it overseas, and then they start to do these kinds of things. And we can begrudge them because perhaps you don't think they're doing the right thing, but the reality is they look at themselves and say, and I think Tim Cook said this to the Senate, the CEO of Apple, he said, well, I can either bring it back and pay 35% tax, or I can keep it over there and make it productive. And so, unsurprisingly, that's what he's doing. Or he's doing what a lot of other people are doing, which is not just that, but they're borrowing money at the U.S., in the U.S., at very low rates, because they say to themselves, why would I pay 35% by bringing that money home? I'll just borrow at very, very low rates. So that's the sense in which we're in a really perverse place with corporations, right, really perverse things.
When he says he's going to take that $100 billion and make it productive in Ireland, how do you make it productive? What's he talking about?
Well, he could be talking about many things. He made those comments before they bought Beats, which is a headphone company. Oh. It has very significant Irish operations. Mm-hmm. they can buy companies abroad. They can do a lot of different things. You know, for example, when Microsoft bought Skype, which, of course, I think most people know what Skype is, one of the comments that Steve Ballmer, who was then the CEO, made was, well, you know, people raised concerns about the price he paid. And he said, well, you know, it's overseas cash, you know, which was his way of saying, look, it's money that I'm going to have to pay at 35% if I bring it home, so I might as well buy Skype because, you know, at least I'm not going to be paying that tax and I'll do something productive. I'll buy a great company called Skype. So that's what I mean. There are a lot of investment opportunities around the world, you know, which companies can go after. What we want them to do, of course, is potentially bring that back home and do whatever they think is the best thing to do and not face a 35% tax to come back home.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Dan, for the call. Mike in Oshkosh, hi.
Yeah, hi. I'll admit I'm a bit neutral on the issue, but it occurs to me that the American way is to avoid paying taxes. And I'll point simply to people here in Wisconsin that get a home in Arizona, Florida, wherever there's a no-tax environment, and they claim residence there. You know, it's pretty much the same thing. I don't hear many callers criticizing the snowbirds that aren't paying their Wisconsin tax.
Well, I think, as I'm sure you'll agree, there are many traditions in America to be proud of. Perhaps one of them is the one you referenced. Of course, we do have a very robust tax system, and people do pay taxes, and we do raise them a fair amount of money. One of the complications of complex tax systems, like our corporate tax, is the people who are really sophisticated and really smart and really big don't end up paying it. And the people who end up paying it are the ones who are kind of stuck here. And the same thing is true of the tax systems that you're referencing in Wisconsin, which is, you know, the only people who can really avail themselves of those kinds of devices tend to be wealthier. And so the real tragedy of these complex systems and these high rates is it ends up leading to more of it being borne by low-income or smaller entities.
Thanks, Mike, for your call. Elaine in Colfax, hi.
Hi. I was just going to recommend that people just don't go to Burger King, period. I don't buy this man's argument. I'm sorry. I don't feel boo-hoo for a big corporation that's just, you know, exploiting the system to maximize profits for the very few at the top. People are underpaid in these jobs. They're devalued. It's just absurd. My husband is a small business owner. He pays taxes. That pays for fire. It pays for the police. It pays for the environmental protection. These people, they can leave. They can go make money in another country. They can, you know, Burger King can go to hell. Excuse me. Thank you.
Professor.
Yeah, well, I think that's a common sentiment, and I'm no particular fan of Burger King, and I'm certainly no particular fan of these transactions. I guess what I'm, and I think, you know, if a movement arises that we start boycotting these companies, you know, I have no point of view about that. I think that would be great. I got no problem with that. My concern is we're going to be missing the forest for the trees then, which is we got a really dysfunctional system, and these transactions are going to keep happening. And at the end of the day, we're going to end up with a lot of companies that are providing jobs here, moving abroad, and I'm not sure why that would be desirable.
So
I understand the vociferous feeling, but it's I think we have to think long run about what we want to be, and I think what we want to be long run is a country which has good jobs, rising wages,
right,
and higher standards of living. And I think if we want those things, we should kind of think about how to get there. And one of the ways to get there is to get companies to invest in the U.S. That's the most important way to get us to that place, at least from my perspective.
All right. So let's talk about that for a moment. So what would help them invest in the U.S.?
Well, so there are a whole bunch of things. So obviously, you know, if we had a better workforce, a very well-trained workforce, and we had a great education system, and we had a great science foundation, all those kinds of expenditures are hugely important. So spending on schools, spending on universities, spending on science and R&D is hugely important. In this particular context, though, the best thing that we can do is change the corporate tax so it becomes a place, the U.S. becomes a place where you want to be headquartered and where you want to invest, because people are looking all around the world for places to invest, and countries are getting very good at attracting them. So in this particular context, it means, you know, reforming the tax in a way that makes it more hospitable, a lower rate, and a territorial system. And then, by the way, enforcing it. So we make sure they pay it, so we don't have the situation now where we have a high tax rate and then a high statutory rate and then a low average rate. So I'm all for making sure people follow the rules. We just want to make sure that we got the right rules.
One more phone call, and then we're out of time. Ron in La Crosse, hi.
Yes, I was thinking, you know, when these countries get together and negotiate these international trade agreements, how come they can't come together on agree on a common tax rate for the countries that are members of these trade agreements, like NAFTA and the other one, Central America? Now they got this Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement in the works. They're trying to isolate China. I guess that's the whole point of that. But they should come. Yeah. They got to agree on, you know, if these corporations want these tariffs that various countries have put up for importing or international trade, then they should at least agree to pay something to the countries that sign on to these free trade agreements.
Professor Desai.
It's just a great question, and this is one of the great puzzles. The caller's put his finger on something really, really deep, which is we have all this multilateral agreement on trade, and we don't see that multilateral agreement on taxes. And in fact, even in the EU, which of course has suffered greatly recently, they have a lot of multilateral arrangements on a lot of things, but they could never really get to multilateral agreement on taxes. So it turns out multilateral agreements on taxes are really, really hard, and people really, really don't like to compromise on them.
Mm-hmm.
So there is initiative that the caller should be aware. The OECD has tried and is trying very hard now with something called BEPS, which is the Base Erosion Profit Shifting Initiative. They are trying really hard to get a multilateral device put in place that could grow up one day into something like a World Tax Organization to parallel the World Trade Organization. And the difficulty is, you know, that for some people sounds great and for some people sounds horrible. So I think taxes are just much more politically divisive and much more sovereign than, you know, trade issues. But mm-hmm. you know, if we meet again in, 50 years, it's entirely possible. That's one eventuality, which is we'll have a system like that. for corporations.
Thank you so much for being with us. We're plumb out of time. Most informative hour. Thanks, Professor Desai.
My pleasure.
Let's meet again before 50 years, okay?
Yeah, that'll
I won't be around. All right, thanks. We thank him for being with us. He is a professor of law at Harvard and a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research. He's also a professor of finance at the Business School at Harvard. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this hour and to K.P. as well for on-air production in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. More to come.